Seeking with empty hands. By Keizan Jokin, from the record of transmitting the light. Seeking at yourself with empty hands, you return with empty hands. In that place where fundamentally nothing is acquired, you really acquire it. Seeking it yourself with empty hands, you return with empty hands. In that place where fundamentally nothing is acquired, you really acquire it. So, it's wonderful to be sitting here this evening together. We could hear the sky speaking earlier this evening, expressing its anger or something. It's amazing when it seems like empty space speaks. But it happens all the time. Lately, I've been giving a lot of talks that have had to do with what I would describe as great doubt in the big picture. We might say it's the no in our great Mu koan. Does a dog have Buddha nature? No. I've been talking a lot about our practice as a path of disappointment, because I'm trying to really build up the size of the Sangha. Sorry. You know, we chant every time we come together, we chant the five remembrances. And there are a lot of people who come to visit the group and they come once and they leave and don't return. And surveys tell us that the reason is because of the five remembrances. We lose everything, really? I'm not interested in thinking about that. So in some way, this is a life can be framed as a path of disappointment, but that has everything to do with what we expect, with what we desire, with what we imagine life should be. The Buddha taught that desires for fixed states, we might say, whether it be perfection or salvation, any kind of perfection or salvation, enlightenment, even as we talked about recently, even this desire to save all beings, framed in these sort of dualistic ways, like it's something outside of our life that needs to happen, that it leads to disappointment. And a lot of that has to do with our five remembrances. It has to do with impermanence, a lack of any fixed self, any abiding substance anywhere. And it's quite difficult for us in our practice to see this as the good news. It's not how it usually shows up for us, because we'd like to be healthy forever. We'd like those we love to remain alive and in our lives forever. We want good things, what we label as good things, to be permanent. A lot of that in our lives gathers around our sense of self, of course. We want to be generous. We want to be good. We want to be kind. We want to be skillful and, you know, impermanence. So we just mess it up. But I think it's wonderful that here's a place where we can be honest about that. It's quite a different teaching from what we might expect, and maybe what we might hope for. You know, if I keep practicing Zen in this group, I'm just going to get to be a better and better person. And I think that, of course, there are ways that we may become, you know, a bit more patient or skillful or awake and aware. But, you know, we have a teaching of 1,000 mistakes, 10,000 mistakes for a reason. Because we just keep making mistakes. Because we're human. We're flawed. You know, we could say because we're human as if that's the cause. We just get swept up in our mental formations. We can't always see what an appropriate response is. We're not omniscient. We have two eyes, not 1,000. We have two hands, not 1,000. We want to save all beings. We want to be Avalokiteshvara. But we are only two of those hands. We are not all 1,000. But it can be difficult for us to accept these teachings. That, for example, that we can't always be happy. That when someone we love hurts us, that we're going to get hurt. When someone we love dies, we're going to cry. That we get swept up in our own defensiveness. And, well, here you have permission to acknowledge all of that. Ah. You don't have to be perfect. To keep chasing after things as if they're permanent and we could hold on to them, that is samsara. Don't we often imagine that, you know, when I can just get over that next hill in my life, we do that for our whole life, don't we? If I just get over that next little hill, that's going to be it. Then I'm going to be happy. I just need to earn that a little bit more money. I just need to get that home, that stable home. I just need to have children. I just need to get rid of my children. Send them off to college or whatever. Oh, it's just, you know, another step away, isn't it? We can begin, of course, we're conditioned this way. There's some survival aspect to it, I suppose. But, you know, also our society feeds a lot of this, you know, telling us that if we just buy this Porsche 911 turbo convertible, we'll be happy. And you know, not just like happy, but like, you know, forever happy. Because if you're ever not really feeling great, you can get in your Porsche. Drive on that beautiful road by the lake that is always in the commercial or whatnot. And there it is. And we do, you know, we take these very habits of mind and we bring them into our spiritual practice. If I can just get through this psychological pain, then I'll be happy. If I can just perfect myself. If I could just stop being attached to everything. If I could have no more desire. He's saying desires are the problem. You know, I hear the teacher up there saying desires. So if I could just have no more desires. Aha! Like, we're always looking for the for the way to attain some permanent state. Well, so there's been the no, right? No. But there's some ironic good news. And the good news is that even our disappointment is a Dharma gate. So I've been talking about great doubt, and I want to veer into the realm of great determination for a bit. This invitation that this practice offers us to practice with no gaining idea. One of the great teachings that I was introduced to by Shunryu Suzuki. And of course, it's just a different spin on talking about our Buddha. This invitation to practice with no gaining idea, but that's so difficult, isn't it? Because, you know, well, then why bother practicing? For most people, the reason we keep practicing is because everything else has failed. Well, I tried drinking. That didn't work. I tried changing my job. I tried scolding my kids. I tried loving my kids. I tried everything. And that may seem like the bad news, but actually it's not the bad news. So for those of us who are here wearing ourselves out with one attempt after another to try to find some permanent state of happiness, and you keep rolling back into these doldrums or boredom or anxiety or pain or grief or depression, you can know that you're not alone. That probably most of the people here have been on that roller coaster called samsara. And that's no small thing to know that we're not alone and that we're all admitting it. Well, at least I am. So what is this practice of practicing with no gaining idea then? I mean, how do we not desire to practice with no gaining idea? What does that look like? If we hold it as a dualistic aspiration, we hold it as something that we need to become, we hold it as an image of practice, as something other than what we are, well, now we're just desiring something else, and there's the problem recreating itself. In some sense, this is just what the mind does. And, you know, so the main teaching is just sit down, shut up, and pay attention. Just notice that that's what the mind does. And it kind of starts to be a little bit funny. We just start to see it as that's just what the mind does. And we aren't so attached to our thoughts. We see that the thoughts are just thoughts. That our deep preferences are just preferences. Now, of course, that sounds nice when I say it out loud, doesn't it? But when we're in the throes, when we are possessed, it's so easy to see in somebody else, isn't it? Somebody else is really possessed by some thought, and you're outside of their head. And you say, my gosh, you're really swept up in this thing, aren't you? You know, like you're the great guru. But then, of course, you yourself experience it. And it's pretty intense, isn't it? When we're caught up in our thoughts, when we're really, you know, that feeling of really being possessed. I think that's where that image of a demonic possession comes from. And it leads people to do some just wild, inappropriate stuff. Hurtful, you know. None of us are exempt. We have human minds. We get carried away by them. So our great determination is to wake up. Our great determination is to see, to see things as they are. To see thoughts as thoughts. To see our preferences as merely our preferences. It's to turn toward whatever is exactly as it is. To be awake to things exactly as they are is what is liberating. That does mean that we're probably not going to achieve that state of absolute perfection that we imagine. But what a relief to let go of that mental formation. We talk about practice as closing the gap between ourself and ourself. This allows us to, in some sense, just be awake with things as they are, to be a bit more open to the way things are, to realize, well, I have mental formations here. You have different mental formations, you know. It's very humbling. But maybe we can offer a slightly more appropriate response that way. When I realize that I'm not seeing with my thinking mind reality itself. How do we save all beings? An appropriate response. One moment after another. So it isn't all bad news. It's true, there's nothing that we get to keep. But that doesn't mean that Zen is some kind of trick. We can wake up. Again and again, waking up. Turning toward what is. We have these remarkable technologies in our tradition. Refined over thousands of years. These forms that we practice here in the Zendo passed down to us. 800, 900 years old. Longer, really, many of them. But these particular forms with the Soto tradition. And many of those passed down to us from our ancestors and teachers in China and Korea, and before that, our ancestors in India. Which brings me to another point, the third leg of our stool in Zen. Great faith. We're relying on a very carefully crafted, honed tradition that we can really lean into, that supports our practice. We can give ourselves to these forms, stepping at the same time as the person in front of you, giving that all of your attention, brings us into this moment. We sit and we notice the way our mind spins all kinds of stories, but we're contained on these cushions, and we may be able to see it every once in a while. We may spend an entire period drifting off in some other world, and then the bell rings. Bing! We're awake, and we see, wow, I really was daydreaming that whole period. Again and again, though, these technologies work on us in so many powerful ways. Can we have some faith in those? And what has been passed down to us. But this faith is bigger than that. That would be like, you know, like a little faith. Great faith is that everything is a Dharma gate. Everything is an opportunity to wake up. Everything exactly as it is. Regardless of what we may personally want, everything is a Dharma gate. Grief, terror, joy, thunder, peace. Little sweet birds chirping in the yard. Everything is a Dharma gate. Everything is an opportunity to wake up to just this moment. Now, we have all kind of teachings about what this moment is. It's empty, it's full, it's empty as form is exactly emptiness is, blah, blah, blah. Impermanence, Notman. I mean, it goes on and on. These are all teachings. They're medicine. They're just to free you. To wake up. Because we get so lost in our mental formations. We get so lost in our attachments. We get so deeply attached to our ideas and preferences and it's completely understandable. Some things really hurt. We have ancient wounds, and they get triggered, and we don't particularly want to feel them. So we create all these coping mechanisms to not have to feel them. These strategies that we work through our lives, and we think, well, now I'm free. But we're bound up by all our strategies. Can we just be with things as they are? So, an invitation for us here. Great doubt. Great determination, great faith. Three pillars of Zen that together help liberate us, offer this opportunity, this capacity for us to just let everything be as it is, to turn toward it, to be a little bit curious about what is right here, right now.